Hi, and welcome to Health Advice for Women with me, Danny. This is more of a continuation of a topic I covered in earlier episodes of the podcast. I'm talking about sugar, but this is also looking at it from a different perspective. And I do hope that you get something out of this. As usual, please feel free to share this with those in on your contact list. Well, enjoy.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Danny. I'm Sue Thomas. I'm the sugar-free coach, and I empower people to break their addiction to sugar. When we break our addiction to sugar, we can feel more comfortable in our clothes. We can improve our relationships. We can improve our sleep. We can improve our hormone balance. And more importantly, we can improve our productivity every day. And that can take us from feeling a bit whatever to wow, or from feeling fed up to fabulous, basically. And sugar is at the root cause of so many of our issues in 21st century life.
Wow, thank you so much for that introduction. That was so, so good, yeah. And you're right about sugar being the center of everything, because I mean, one of my earlier episodes has been on sugar, but I think I just felt that it was time to revisit sugar again, because it's still something that's ongoing. And you know, I get people still asking me questions about, you know, sugar and how the effects on food and stuff like that. So what I wanted to say is, what I wanted to ask is, when people say sugar, because there's sugar in practically everything that we eat, including fruits. So I get asked the questions like, can I eat banana? Because they said, oh, you know, they found that there's sugar in banana. And I think there's sugar in, there's somebody who's saying there's sugar in apples and all of that stuff. Does that then mean that we can't eat fruits anymore?
Yeah.
Or certain fruits?
So yeah, you're right. Sugar is added to so many of our processed foods in 21st century life to give it shelf stability, basically. So many of us are on a blood sugar roller coaster. Often we don't even realize it because we're consuming sugar in the form of processed foods, and it doesn't seem like we're consuming some sugar, but actually we will be. So what I like to do is I like to kind of suggest to my clients that there's like a glucose spectrum. But basically, the body functions on glucose. Glucose comes from carbohydrate. There's this kind of spectrum of carbohydrates that you want one end of it that you're okay with, and the other end you need to go with sparingly. So if we look at that spectrum, we've got sort of greens and the fibrous carbohydrates at one end. And then sort of reds and oranges, which will be more of the kind of fruit-based and starchy carbohydrates, all of which are kind of naturally produced carbohydrates. And then we've got beige carbohydrates, which we've been told for years are the complex carbohydrates, but actually they're not. They're just processed carbohydrates because they're manufactured like bread and pasta. And then we've got the white refined sugar, so cakes and cookies and chocolate and alcohol and all of that kind of thing. So you've got this one end of the spectrum all the way through to the other end of the spectrum. On the top end of the spectrum, on the greens, the reds and the oranges, these naturally occurring produce basically contain something called antioxidants, which help to reduce the inflammatory process that happens when we metabolize the glucose in those carbohydrates. On the other end of the scale, with the beige and the white carbohydrates, we don't have those antioxidants that neutralize the damage that can be done when we process the carbohydrate to use it as glucose. So what happens is those beige and white carbohydrates essentially start to heat the body up. They start to increase the aging process and speed the aging process up. Now, that might be stiffening of the cardiovascular system. It might just be lines around the eyes and age spots on the back of the hands. But the aging process in terms of the stiffening of the cardiovascular system, pressure on the liver, pressure on the intestine, so many things that can happen when we are getting the majority of our carbohydrates from those beige and what that beige and white end of the spectrum. So if you just think, basically, the beige and white end of the spectrum is heating your body up, is speeding up the aging process because those substances don't have the products in them or the nutrients in them to be able to neutralize the the inflammatory process that happens when we access that glucose. And on the other end of the scale, we've got the reds and the greens and the oranges that are calming the body down, allowing insulin to stay really nice and balanced, and have all these beautiful nutrients in them called antioxidants that help to reduce that inflammatory process that happens when the body is accessing glucose. Any metabolic process the body goes through creates, you know, is almost like an inflammatory process because we have to access, we have to metabolize the glucose from the carbohydrate. And that in itself has byproducts. But those byproducts, if we're getting our carbohydrate from the kind of reds and greens and oranges, the more colorful your plate, the more those byproducts can be neutralized. The less colorful your plate, the more beige, the more white your plate, then those byproducts are not neutralized and they start to heat the body up. That's the easiest way to think about it in terms of what am I looking for. And if someone then says, well, can I eat fruit? Yes, of course you can eat fruit, but it's how you eat that fruit that's really important. Because if you're getting your carbohydrates from that really colorful end of the spectrum, the green end, the fiber end, will result in a really slow release of glucose into the system, and as a result, a really slow release of insulin. Now, insulin is a really dominant hormone, and if it rises too high in the system, will have a really big impact on that further inflammatory process. But if you're getting your glucose, your carbohydrate is coming, your glucose is coming from the reds and the orange carbohydrates, they are, the insulin in them or the sugars in them are released a little bit more quickly. So insulin is a bit more insulin is released than in the green end. So if you consume those, if it's fruit, for example, with a little bit of protein, protein doesn't have a relationship with insulin. So it will slow the release of those, of that glucose down, which means you can still keep your blood sugars really quite nicely balanced, or if you're consuming greens and reds and oranges, if you consume it with a little bit of protein. If you're consuming the beige and the whites, you can still consume it with protein, but because it's so quickly released, the glucose is so quickly released into the system, insulin will rise really quickly. And it's when insulin starts to rise in the system that we start to have issues developing. So we just explore insulin in a little bit more detail. If insulin peaks really quickly, so it will peak really quickly if we're consuming our carbohydrate, our glucose, getting our glucose from the beige and the white end of the spectrum, if it peaks really quickly, as quickly as it's peaked, it will pick up the sugars in the bloodstream and either take it to the cells for energy production. And if the cells don't need any more energy because we're perhaps sitting at our desk and we've eaten a bar of chocolate at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, for example, and we don't need to create any energy, what the insulin will do is it will take the sugars from the bloodstream as quickly as it was released. It will take them to the bloodstream, from the bloodstream, and take them to the liver, where it will store those sugars as glycogen. But then what happens is you have this big crash in blood sugars. And so with that big crash in blood sugars, because your brain functions on glucose, the message is sent by the body to go, we need to eat some more sugar because we need to bring our blood sugars back up again. And the automatic response there is to go, I'm going to eat some more, something quick, and that will release the sugars quickly into my bloodstream. And then the cycle happens again. So you eat something like another, some more chocolate or a slice of toast. You have a quick release of sugars into your bloodstream. More insulin is released. The insulin takes the sugars to the cells. The cells don't need it. And then we have another crash in blood sugars. And then those sugars are taken to the liver to store as glycogen. So you start to get on this kind of roller coaster of high insulin, low insulin, high insulin, low insulin throughout the course of the day. Whereas if you're consuming your carbohydrate from the green, the red and the orange end, and if you're combining it with a little bit of protein as well, because it's much slower to access the glucose from the end of those carbohydrates at that end, it's a much slower release of insulin. So you have a much more balanced insulin through the course of the day rather than this peak and trough. And as I say, when we have the peak and trough, that's speeding up the aging process. It's heating the body up. It's starting to stiffen the arteries. is starting to compromise our immune system. It's having an impact on our hormone balance. It's impacting our liver function. Liver is super important for good health. Having a healthy working liver. So many side effects from getting all of your glucose from carbohydrates, from the beige and the white carbohydrates, as compared to getting your glucose from your greens and reds and oranges. And that really is the easiest way to think about it. What you want to be doing every day is thinking, my carbohydrates that I'm consuming are coming from the colorful carbohydrates. And as long as I'm consuming those with protein, it doesn't really matter how many I'm eating, because I'm never going to overfeed myself, because my body, if I'm listening to my body, is going to tell me that actually I've had enough now. And that'll keep my blood sugars really well balanced to the next meal. And then I'll make some good choices again. If you're getting all your glucose from beige and whites, you're going to have a peak in glucose and a crash in glucose. So you're going to eat some more glucose and another peak and another crash. And you end up overeating because you're on this blood sugar roller coaster and you're constantly feeding yourself more glucose in order to kind of function throughout the course of the day. So it's a really fine balance. And actually, the easiest way to understand if you're on a blood sugar roller coaster is to listen to what your body's telling you. If by 10:30 in the morning you're hungry and you're reaching for a digestive biscuit to go with your coffee, for example, or something else, a bar of chocolate, what you ate at breakfast time has spiked your blood sugars really quickly, and then they've crashed again. And you can see the same thing happening with a 3 o'clock slump. If you're eating something at lunchtime and then you're feeling tired at 3 o'clock and hungry, then what you ate at lunchtime didn't work for your insulin balance either. So you can really begin to kind of manipulate the food that you're eating on a day-to-day basis to work in terms of keeping your insulin really well balanced, keeping your blood sugars balanced, and then ultimately slowing down that that aging process, that heating process that I talked about, and starting to move into that kind of much calmer space. When your blood sugars are balanced, it's so much easier to cope with stress externally as well. So there's so many other reasons. I could go on for hours, Dani. I really could, about why we need to be focusing on that red, green and orange end of the spectrum as opposed to the beige and the white end.
Oh, wow. It's really interesting what, you know, the 3 o'clock thing, because I mean, us Brits, we tend to talk about this a lot, about this 3 o'clock, we say the 3 o'clock slump, or the fact that, oh, I need a quick sugar fix. And, you know, the 3 o'clock or the 4 o'clock. And then, oh, let's not forget the 11s, by the way.
Yeah.
The one when you said, oh, the digestive biscuit, that made me chuckle a bit in the background. Obviously, I had to sort of like switch my microphone off, so I was chuckling away. And basically, I remember the 11s so well, because that I was part of that club, basically, when I went in an earlier role that I had, sort of like when I was still a lot younger. And so basically, what we sat, 11 o'clock, and you know, we all got around and you start making your teas and the coffees. I'm a coffee person, but yeah, you just go around and your biscuits. Where are the biscuits? Straight away, you start looking for the biscuits. You start looking for the chocolate, especially mine was penguin. So yeah, mine was a penguin. So yeah, for those who don't know, penguin is basically a chocolate bar. Our non-British listeners, it's basically a chocolate bar that's really, really, I don't know if people still eat that these days. I'm not sure if it's popular among the younger people, but it was for some of us in a certain generation, I believe, of a certain generation, I should say. Yeah, so, you know, talking about that, and you mentioned this stuff about how people feel afterwards. So how do we then, you know, so we've had breakfast, but there are also times when you sort of like, you know, maybe you're really busy at work and people haven't really had the time to eat lunch or have their lunch in the time that they wanted, and they suddenly find themselves really hungry and they feel like they've eaten something, but they feel like a snack. And maybe they're feeling a bit weak during the day for some reason because they've burned a lot of energy. Mm. So what would you then say to them to bring that energy back up again?
So if you get your breakfast right, a breakfast should be protein savory based breakfast, because first thing in the morning, your stomach's got a lot of hydrochloric acid in it, and hydrochloric acid is designed to break down protein. It's not designed to break down carbohydrate. Carbohydrate digestion starts in the mouth. Protein digestion starts in the stomach. And what we want to do is to consume at breakfast time more of a protein-based breakfast, less carbohydrates. So, you know, toast, cereal, all the things we've been told, porridge, all the things we've been told we should have for breakfast, are the things that actually start to put us on a blood sugar roller coaster at the beginning of the day. So if we can focus on more of a savory-based breakfast, maybe eggs, spinach, avocado, that kind of thing, you know, you can have a little bit of toast if you're having it with lots of good quality protein and lots of colours. That's the crucial bit, is to get breakfast right. Now, everybody differs as well as in terms of breakfast, because, you know, one person could be eating something at breakfast time and it keeps them full for hours. The next person could eat exactly the same thing and they're hungry by 10:30. So there isn't a one size fits all, really. What we've got to do is listen to what our body's telling us and maybe tweak breakfast. I'll give you a really good example. A client of mine was having porridge for breakfast with loads of seeds and nuts on it. And she decided one day that seeds, nuts and blueberries actually was what she was having on it. And she decided one day, or she realized one day, she didn't have any blueberries. So she got a little bit of frozen fruit out of the freezer that included mango. And so she just had some, it was just some strawberries, some mango and something else, blackberries maybe, I don't know what it was. But anyway, she had exactly the same breakfast apart from she'd swapped the fruit out slightly. And by 10:30, she was hungry because mango is quite a high sugary fruit. So it did spike her insulin quite quickly and then it crashed. Whereas on the days where she was just having it with blueberries, it wasn't an issue for her and her blood sugars were staying balanced through the course of the morning. Now we should be able to go from one meal to the next, really, if our blood sugars are balanced, we should be able to go sort of 4, 4.5 hours, maybe even 5 hours without even feeling hungry, without even thinking about food, because our blood sugars are so well balanced. And so as a result, then we get to the next meal and we can make the right choices. But if we're eating something that's not right for our system at breakfast time and we're hungry by 10:30, we'll eat something sugary and then we'll be making the wrong choices at lunchtime because we're so hungry. So if someone is looking to kind of, you know, manage their hormones, manage their weight, rather than thinking calories, let's think, how can I keep my blood sugars balanced? That's the first thing. And if someone is super busy at work and doesn't really get enough time for lunch, and I do have a client like this at the minute who is really busy with work. And one of the things I've said to her is, let's just look at creating a green smoothie that you can create before you go to work, take to work with you, and then you can just drink it through the course of the day. And in fact, I do this a lot when I'm back to back with clients. I will have a green smoothie. So I'll put like spinach and pear and maybe some carrot in it or something like that. I'll make it in the morning with some pea protein and just some water mixed up. And then I can have it at my desk and I can drink it. No one even knows I'm consuming something that is going to just help me to keep my blood sugars balanced. So that's a really easy thing someone can do if they know that lunch is going to be a bit a bit ad hoc, a bit hit and miss today. Actually, you can take a bottle with a green smoothie in and that'll serve its purpose. And then often I work as well with clients who are maybe on the road quite a bit as well. So I'll say to them, well, how can we make sure that you're not then going into, you know, a service station just to buy a sandwich or what have you? So I'll suggest that they maybe make a frittata, like an omelette type thing that they can cut up into pieces and take with them that they can eat really easily with some cherry tomatoes. So there's loads of easy ways that you can create something that is really good for your body, really good for blood sugar balance without taking too much time. But unfortunately, because most of us are on a blood sugar roller coaster and having blood sugars on a roller coaster, we feel tired all of the time. The knock-on effect then is that, oh, I can't be bothered to cook, I haven't got enough time to cook, or, you know, so we end up kind of reaching for processed foods that are full of sugar, and it just then exacerbates that blood sugar roller coaster even further. So what I would say here is the first thing to do is go, let's just break the cycle by getting breakfast right. Let's not worry about anything else for the rest of the day, but if we can get breakfast right, so that we start with balanced blood sugars, then that's going to have a knock-on effect to choices that we make throughout the rest of the day. And you should really be able to go, if your blood sugars are balanced, you should be able to go from one meal to the next without needing to snack, you know, 4, 4.5 to 5 hours without needing to snack. And that shows that your blood sugars are really balanced. In 21st century life, we've been persuaded by the food industry that what we need to eat is, you know, what we need to do is eat 24/7. But actually, that doesn't work for our system. Our bodies need to have this space between meals in order to kind of make sure everything's well digested, that everything is kind of recovering post-eating. And then once we've eaten and we've cleared everything through the system, then it's right. And then we're ready to kind of top up our blood sugars again. And then we eat something, you know, 4.5, 5 hours time. But unfortunately, what we've got now is this society where we've been told that you've got to snack constantly. You've got to snack constantly for 16 hours a day. And that results in people's blood sugar balances going all over the place.
Yeah, it's so true about the so-called snacking constantly. And you've just touched on something that's I'm starting to notice with my body lately as well. So that the whole not being able to, you know, in terms of breakfast and balancing it properly. And I guess what it is, what's been happening, I kind of almost want to blame on the change of weather, having to sort of like 3 hours after my breakfast, wanting to have a snack or something. So what I then do is I try not to, but obviously I have to work, and so I don't concentrate as much. I wouldn't be able to concentrate as much. So I'll probably take something like, you know, just snack on a fruit or something. And I just think, okay, that helps a little bit. But
there's a really good tip there, actually. A really good tip is that it takes about 20 minutes for your liver to kick in, to release some of the glycogen that's stored in your liver. So if you feel hungry about 10, 11 o'clock, if you set a timer for 20 minutes, have a drink, and do something else and wait until that 20 minutes is up, you'll probably find that you're not hungry after the 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think I've always said that myself, but I guess sometimes when you're kind of like really busy in the middle of everything and meetings going on and all of that, so like, oh my gosh, you know what, just grab a piece of fruit and just go with that or something, a small piece of fruit or something like that. So that kind of, obviously when I'm so busy, I kind of don't think about that so much, but I think I kind of got better again, went back to my normal self again in the last few days. And I like the fact that you said the whole thing about blueberries, because, you know, as most of my viewers would know, I have written a book on breakfast, making breakfast ahead. And so breakfast on the go, so basically when people don't have the time, and offer tips in the book where people can make breakfast ahead. So on weekends, you know, just make those things ahead. And I like the fact you talked about smoothie as well, because smoothie is something that you don't have to necessarily make it on the day. You can make it the night before and put it in the fridge.
Yeah.
And you can make a batch, actually, because that's what I tend to do in the summer. Just make a batch and put it in the freezer. Fridge. Or you can put it in the freezer as well and then bring it out. But you put it in the fridge and then every day you just bring one out. You know, you have a different one and stuff like that. So
yeah.
I think there are so many practical ways that people can do things. And like you said, you know, people wanting this whole thing about modern society, how we have to do everything, you know, we have to keep eating constantly. We don't necessarily have to keep eating constantly. And I think it's because that's been so drummed into people's heads now, and it just becomes sort of something like a mindset thing, and you just automatically brain goes into that auto, I have to eat, but you know, not necessarily that. So my book again talks about, you know, just how people can sort of realize that you can eat breakfast, even though you can't eat it at home. But if you kind of plan ahead, I'm a big advocate of meal planning, and it's worked for me for years, and I've always recommended that meal planning is one of the best ways that you can sort of avoid overeating, basically. That's it.
I highly recommend meal planning and batch cooking as well, so that you've kind of a little bit organized for the week, especially if you know that the week's going to be super busy and you're not going to have enough time to cook properly. Use a bit of time at the weekend. That little bit of investment of time at the weekend will pay dividends over and over again during the course of the week, basically.
Definitely, I'll say that, especially now with the way things are going with food cost and everything else. You know, this is actually the best time to start doing that now for people who have not been able to do that. So I think you've pretty much covered all the questions that I had written down before, but I just wanted to ask one question about bloating. So how can we reduce bloating?
So bloating often is a sign that we've got low stomach acid. Well, it depends where the bloating is. If the bloating is, if you experience the bloating within 20 minutes of eating, that's usually a sign that you've got low stomach acid and your body's not, and your stomach is not able to digest or start to break down the food properly that's in your stomach. So there, what you would want to be thinking about doing is maybe taking a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar before you eat, just to help kind of repopulate the acid in your stomach to make sure that everything is broken down properly. Unfortunately, the medical profession treat everything with omeprazole, which destroys stomach acid. And sometimes, in most cases, it's a low stomach acid, not a high stomach acid, that is the problem. So if it's in the stomach, if it's within 20 minutes of eating that bloating, then that's what you want to look at in terms of trying to improve your stomach acid. Maybe some digestive enzymes. You can buy supplements in the form of digestive enzymes. They will help to reduce bloating in the stomach. And then if it's over the course of the next 2 hours, it's as it's moving into the small intestine and the large intestine. So there could be a bit of dysbiosis there. So a little bit of an imbalance as far as the gut bacteria is concerned. So maybe some fermented foods, making sure you're getting lots of green foods in your diet, because they're all really good prebiotic foods. They'll feed the good bacteria. And sometimes as well, it can be a bit of a yeast overgrowth as well. And yeast relies on sugar to function. And so that can kind of aggravate sugar cravings and stuff as well. So really, if you've got a bit of a yeast overgrowth in the intestine, or if your gut bacteria is out of balance. But sometimes it can be as simple as eating foods that aren't quite right for your body. So just, again, switching away from maybe dairy, for example, and moving more to plant-based milks and things like that. Maybe reducing the amount of cheese that you're consuming down. Any other, what I always recommend to my clients is keep a record of the food that you've eaten and how did it make you feel in 2.5 hours time. If it made you feel lethargic, if it made you feel bloated, it didn't work for you. And there's not many foods these days that make me feel bloated, because when I first started this journey of starting to focus on sugar and reducing the amount of sugar in my diet, it was because I'd got a really, I'd had an issue with a knee infection that had resulted in me having antibiotics for a long period of time. And that basically destroyed my gut bacteria. And the result of that was that I was constantly bloated and foods were kind of going through me like nobody's business. And I knew I needed to heal my intestine before I did anything else. And so if someone is struggling with bloating, that's a sign that your intestine needs a little bit of TLC. So as I said, green foods, short chain fatty acids, feed the good bacteria. Lots of fermented foods in the sort of form of miso and kimchi and kombucha and things like that can also support the gut bacteria. Trying to reduce your sugar down, but keeping a record of the foods you've eaten and how it's made you feel within 2.5 hours. And if it's increased your bloating, if it's made your bloating feel worse, then just at the moment that food isn't working for you. So remove it from your diet. It's about becoming a bit of a food detective, basically. That's what we all need to do. We've lost touch with how foods are making us feel, how foods are making our body feel. If we can become a bit more of a food detective, we can really start to heal a lot of the issues in our body.
Wow, I really do like the whole food detective thing. So yeah, but yes, that's pretty much everything that I was gonna ask. So basically, thank you so much for such an insightful and very interesting interview. And also, I got so much out of this as well. So basically, how can people contact you if they wanted to work with you?
Yeah, so you can go to my website, thesugarfreecoach.com, all one word, www.thesugarfreecoach.com. You can book in a clarity call with me. I always offer everyone a free clarity call to have a conversation. You can download my free ebook, The Truth About Sugar, or you could do my sugar quiz. At the top of the page, on the front page, there is a little button that says take my sugar quiz, and you can take the sugar quiz and see if you've got an addiction to sugar. And then there's a couple of videos I've made that can help you with actions you can take right now to reduce your sugar consumption and kind of help to balance your blood sugars. So that's the easiest way to get in touch with me. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm Sue Thomas, the Sugar Free Coach on Instagram, and the same on Facebook. I have a Facebook page, Sue Thomas, the Sugar Free Coach on Facebook page too. So and it's just been lovely to talk to you, Danny. Thank you so much for having me on. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much. And I do hope that everyone that's listening has actually taken a lot out of this, and you will discover that there's a whole thing about sugar is so huge, like Sue sort of like was saying earlier, was there's so much more that we still need to know about sugar. So it's not kind of like we know it all, because I don't know it all, but and having someone as Sue is really good to have.
Top tip is just to focus on, top tip is just to go, stay with the colourful carbohydrates. That's where you want to focus your efforts, basically.
Once again, thanks for listening. And I really do hope that you got a lot out of this particular episode. As usual, do feel free to share this episode and pass on Sue's details as well. Take care of yourselves for now. Bye.